This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning and welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase studio on a rainy North Michigan Avenue. And joining me here in studio and historic Tribune Tower is Illinois Democratic Comptroller Susana Mendoza.
Good morning. I don't see any people hanging out by the windows, though. They'd be soaked.
Well, yeah, but still, it's Chicago. It's a Sunday morning.
I'm a little sad, though, Rick. This is like my last interview at this just iconic, majestic location. It's a bummer.
Well, we will have you over to the new digs up on the 18th floor in the Allstate Skyline studio. Yes. See, we've got everything covered.
Still not super excited.
It's a great view. As Dave Schwann's over there doing the news now, and he's got his head in the clouds. So
still a little sad.
Things are slowly clearing.
That's the Skyline weather report there.
Things are slowly clearing.
I just see fog. That's all I see out of there.
As I told Rick earlier, though, I still can't see Tribune Tower. But hopefully that will change. But no, these new facilities are just beautiful, and you'll enjoy coming over here.
It's really like 21st century, I have to say. It's almost like the new bathrooms at the Billy Goat.
Is it true that you
Four Seasons Hotel? Yeah,
exactly. Yes.
Is it true you have a collection of lanyards?
They may soon be showing up, yes.
Well, I'm going to add one to your collections.
Oh, excellent.
Last interview with you at the Trib Towers.
Oh.
Illinois Office of Controller Lanyard.
An official lanyard. Well, thank you so much.
It won't get you into the Thompson Center without an ID.
Well, I will add this to the collection. Thank you so much. And thank you for waiting till I had moved all of my other garbage out of here.
Of course, because I didn't want it to get lost in the mix,
It's going right here into my bag, right there. Well, thank you for coming on. We've been talking the last couple of weeks, obviously, with the passage of a state budget, one somewhat surprising.
We have a state budget.
Well,
with everything else going on, people aren't even talking about that. That's the biggest piece of news that we've seen in 4 years, okay? We have a budget.
But it says something that it is news, because in the past, it would be part of the ordinary business of government.
I know. Isn't that crazy? So, well, thankfully, we're back on track where we should be, at least in terms of doing the people's work on time.
But now there are concerns still about provisions for paying down the bill backlog,
sure,
which had escalated over $16 billion during the impasse,
mm-hmm,
and still is around $7 billion.
Yeah, it's about 7.5 today. It fluctuates anywhere between, 6.8 or so to $8 billion, depending on what bills came in and whether or not I've released payment for things like education, right, or health care. We usually have to cobble together the amount of money that we need to make a huge payment. So that's why if people on any given day go to our website, they'll see that the bill backlog might be $6 billion, $6.5 billion one day and $7.5 billion the next. It just depends. But we might be holding on to payments. Once we release them, then that bill backlog goes back to what is now actually amazingly around $6.5 billion to $7.5 billion versus $16.7 billion.
Yes, so I mean everything
we're
is
moving
relative
in the right direction. Yes,
but what provisions are there to further reduce that backlog?
So again, unfortunately, the income tax that everybody talks about, right? They say, well, we're paying higher income taxes. Why can't you use that money to pay down the bill backlog? I still can't use that money to pay down the bill backlog because that money was just it was needed in order to stop the deficit spending that had been happening under this administration when the income tax that was in place under Quinn expired when Governor Rauner took office. And it would have been okay that happened because it was a $5 billion hole in our budget automatically. And that would have been okay if they had cut $5 billion worth of expenses during the course of his administration on any given one of those last 4 years. But instead of making cuts or perhaps having maybe not a 5% income tax, but something lower and a combination of cuts to offset the $5 billion, that would have been okay. But they just continued to spend as if that $5 billion income tax was still coming in, and even above and beyond what the Quinn administration spent. So when you're spending at a deficit of $2.5 billion in any given fiscal year, it's going to be very difficult to make up that money. And you know, this is part of why when I took office and I realized the extent of the deficit spending that had been happening, that we were really, really vigilant about talking about a new piece of legislation like the Debt Transparency Act that allows me and the rest of the public, whether it's the legislature or the media, to see how the money is being spent on a monthly basis instead of just finding the bad news a year after it happened.
Well, let's talk about that Debt Transparency Act, which part of the problem is, and this administration's done it, previous administrations do it, they hold back bills. And that puts you in the hot seat because you don't know necessarily what's coming in.
Yeah, so two things. It puts me in the hot seat, and that's okay. I mean, I'm prepared and I've always run to be in the hot seat. But worse yet is that it puts taxpayers in debt for future generations to come. I mean, if you don't know how the state of Illinois is spending your money, obviously if I don't know as the state's chief fiscal officer what's been charged to the state's credit card because I can't see it. And I know it's crazy for people who are listening because they're like, what do you mean you can't see it? But when I took office, I actually couldn't see almost half of the bills that had been incurred by the state of Illinois. They stayed at the governor's state agency level, and I had no visibility on them until we changed the law to allow me to have this monthly, at least, visibility of what the state's liabilities are. But, you know, it sounds like such a crazy thing, but most importantly, the taxpayers, the people who are responsible for paying back this debt, don't know that it's even happening until it's already happened and there's nothing that we can do about it. So this is why, yeah, I might be on the hot seat, but at the end of the day, taxpayers are left, you know, having to carry this bag and pay for it.
I know that there's been a number of bills that you were successful in getting through the General Assembly with bipartisan support.
Yes, I'm so proud of that. Yeah.
Which I think is another signal of what's going on at the top here, that the fact, because they're basically transparency bills.
Yes, they were pretty much all transparency bills. One of them, of course, was the Debt Transparency Act, which we passed last session, but this session we moved five transparency bills. Well, four of them were transparency, one of them was about minority contracting, but principally four of these bills dealt specifically with shining greater light, if you want to say sunshine, on what's happening with our state's finances, because as they say, sunshine is the greatest disinfectant, right? We want people to know how their money's being spent, and we want the governor and the legislature to have to be accountable to the taxpayers as to how they plan to pay down the debt that's been incurred by the state.
Well, I want to get to some detail on those, but we need to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, joined here in studio by Illinois State Comptroller Susana Mendoza. We've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome as always to the Sunday Spin.
Hey, good morning. Hey, Rick, first, before I get to my question, I really, truly have to thank you for allowing me to be a guest in that wonderful, historic studio
at
720.
Well, you absolutely earned that role, that's for sure. Thanks so much for listening, Ron.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. Ms. Mendoza, question. Yeah. Last week, Standard & Poor's came out with some kind of analysis of the budget. And one thing they did question some of the projected revenue. They mentioned, for example, it's based on the Sullivan Thompson Center. So just maybe can you talk about the projected revenues and just how confident that you are of the state bringing those revenues in? Okay. Thanks. And again, Rick, have a wonderful day. And thanks as always.
Thank you, Ron.
Thanks for your question, Ron. So I'm confident in some areas and not confident in other areas. So the sale of the Thompson Center is something that pretty much seems like it's just become a staple that they put in the budget every year.
It fills the $270 million hole.
I don't believe it's legit is my take on that. So I'll believe it when I see it. I also think, like, if you've ever even tried to sell your home, you know, it's not a super quick process. And selling the Thompson Center is not going to be the easiest thing to potentially sell, you know, within a fiscal fiscal year. Yeah. So I think that they need to be more realistic and honest with the public as to if they really do believe that they can sell, we'd like to see some movement on that before I actually believe that that's going to happen. So
and we've seen the hurdles too with the, you know, questions involving Emanuel's administration, issues about the CTA stop, and how does that, who's going to cover those kinds of costs.
But you saw what happened last year. I mean, they had a deal. The mayor had gotten somebody to actually give more than what the governor said he needed in his budget to sell that, and then the governor actually said, nah, you know what, that's not a good enough deal. Now I want a building that's even taller than the Willis Tower, right? So it's so crazy to me. Like, you're there, you have the victory, it's on a silver platter, and it's just never good enough, right? So how can you say that you want to sell the building for, let's say, $250, they offer you $3, and then you're like, you're going to change the parameters again? So these deals fall through all the time, and I don't think that they've been taken seriously. So you should not be including that in the budget if you don't really believe that it's going to happen. They keep saying it's going to happen. Like I said, I'll see it when I believe it.
I wanted to talk about some of these bills that we were talking about before the break. And one is the Truth in Hiring Act, which this has been a longtime practice of administrations, both Republican and Democrat, of parking people that work for the governor and attaching their salaries to various state agencies so it doesn't look like it comes from the governor's office, in a way to look like, oh, I cut spending in the governor's office. Well, yeah, because you parked five people over here at the administration, some different administrative place. And, you know, we've seen it with Ronner. I mean, I go back to Dan Walker, and he there was a guy named Pat Quinn that he parked at the Illinois Industrial Commission,
who later became a chronic offender of this deceptive practice, right?
As governor.
For sure, yeah.
So this, I mean, in essence, this finally assigns people to, or requires the administration to say where these people are parked?
Yeah, so it wouldn't be legal for them to do that anymore, right? So, and there's two things here at play with offshoring. And offshoring, for people who don't know, that's, you know, I think you explained it pretty well, is that the governor, for example, and again, this is Democratic and Republican governors as far back as we can tell. This year, Governor Rauner said that he had 44 employees on his payroll, and that cost taxpayers $4.9 million for that payroll. When in essence, he doesn't have 44 employees. The reality of it is that he has 102 employees. 58 employees are actually hidden in other state agencies. They're paid for, even though they work directly for Governor Rauner, they're paid for out of budgets that pertain to other state agencies. And why is this important? Number one, because it's taking necessary dollars that those state agencies need for the operations of their own agencies away from them and into the governor's payroll in a way that the people don't even know that. It's not transparent at all. And the other reason why this is really important is because it's an issue of separation of powers, that per the Constitution, the governor has certain duties, I have certain duties, and the legislative branch, which is an equal but separate branch, has the duty and the constitutional obligation of appropriating funds. That means determining what the budget levels are for all of the state agencies and all the constitutional officers. That is not the governor's job. So, in essence, if the Department of Human Services comes to the General Assembly, to the legislature, and they say, we need $1 million, and we need it for autism programs and all these other kind of issues like that the Department of Human Services would deal with. And then, after the budget is approved by the legislature in that respect, they say, you get $1 million. Then the governor, after the budget's been signed, when there's no more eyes on it, goes in and takes, let's say, $200,000 out of that department to use to hire, you know, a new person that he wants working for him. It's so disingenuous. It's deceptive. It takes needed dollars from public safety, from human services, and that should not happen anymore. He campaigned against it, yet he actually doubled down on what Pat Quinn was doing, a Democratic governor, and, like, perfected it even more. And so, you know, I'm putting a stop to it. The legislature voted with me, I believe, unanimously on that bill in the House. Maybe a few people voted, like 7, I think, in the Senate might have voted against it. I might be confusing myself because my bills just passed pretty overwhelmingly this session. I'm very happy about that. But long story short, we need to put a stop to this practice. And people just need to know that when their governor, whoever that governor may be, Democratic or Republican, presents the budget to the people, that that number is properly reflected and it's an honest figure. We deserve honest budgets.
I want to switch gears here in the closing seconds that we have with you. The Me Too movement, obviously, and we saw issues renewed involving Speaker Madigan and his decision to rid himself of his longtime chief of staff, Tim Mapes. You were named to head a three-person panel to examine these issues as far as the Democratic Party is concerned. Can you give us an update on where that panel is?
Sure. So we are, myself, Representative Carol Ammons, and Senator Melinda Bush are part of the Anti-Harassment, Equality, and Access Panel. And we are not an investigative panel, but what we are charged with doing is coming up with a set of recommendations that any party, not just the Democratic Party, but any party or anyone who wants to actually read these and say that we can do better will be able to utilize to make it a better workplace environment, right, where people don't feel unsafe going to their work, both from a sexual harassment perspective, but also from a safety at the workplace, right? It could be bullying. People don't feel safe at their work because of those situations. Harassment is not just sexual in nature. There's other ways, but we want to tackle the issue of sexual harassment. What processes could be put in place that would prevent these cases from actually happening, that women could feel comfortable going to a certain avenue to address their issue? You know, the woman who accused Tim Mapes said there was nowhere she could go. I mean, he is really the person that should have been handling those things in the absence of a human resources department. And so we need to really, like, come up with this standard of best practices that our party or even the Republican Party or any other party can look at. Beyond the issue of sexual harassment and workplace safety is the issue of accessibility for women into, for example, whether it's the Democratic Party or, again, the Republican Party. We can do better. And we have to figure out what are those barriers and obstacles to entry that prohibit women from rising within the staffing ranks as well as rising within the party itself. Women who want to run for public office. You know, there are so many obstacles for us. It's tough even for a guy to do it, but if it's tough for a guy, you can imagine how many more obstacles are in place for women. So whether it's investing more in female candidates or giving greater amount of resources, recruitment tools for female candidates, there's a lot of things that our panel is going to try to address that will make it a better work environment, both for people wanting to get involved on the political side, but also on the government side.
That's Illinois' Democratic Comptroller, Susana Mendoza. Comptroller, thank you so much for joining me this
morning. Thanks for having me, and good luck. I'll see you at the next place.
We'll see you at the next place. Right, there's always a next place.
Thanks, Rick.